The following program, Flame On, is presented by the Nerdy Show Network, geeky programming for all nerds across the multiverse. All Nerdy Show programming is made possible by A Comic Shop, Orlando's number one comic shop and nerd destination, and with the generous support of listeners like you. To learn how you can support this and other fine geek programming, visit nerdyshow.com.
Welcome to Flame On. I am Brian. I'm here with a very special guest, someone who I have known, whose work I have known for years, many years now, and have been following kind of passively in the background, watching, reading the webcomics, checking out the latest episodes of the different comics that he has produced in Yowie 911. I'm saying that right, I think. I have Alex Wolfson on the line. Hey, Alex.
Hey, how's it going, Brian?
Doing very well. And like I said, like I don't even remember when it was, but I followed your stuff since well before the Young Protectors, possibly even back before Artifice, I think. So really, we're talking like those early days that you would put up those like very small or very short, I shouldn't say small, comics online and just really digging it. And I think I don't remember what you did first. What was one of the first couple comics you did? I know they were really good, but the name is eluding me.
That's no problem. The very first comic I did was a very short comic called A Shot in the Dark. It was 16 pages, and it was basically kind of just to teach myself how to really write comics and also work with artists. My background is as a filmmaker. And so I had experience writing film scripts and making my own films, but I hadn't made a comic before, Shot in the Dark. And so I wanted to write something short that, had a beginning, middle, and end, and that I could have the experience of working with a team of artists on to see what that was like. And A Shot in the Dark was actually a magic school story about one boy who saves his boyfriend, who's a magician's apprentice, from a demon he accidentally summoned. And it was kind of in line with what I was wanting my brand to be with, as you mentioned, you got it right, Yowie 911, which was basically the idea of, cute guys rescuing other guys was sort of my original thinking with my work. And so that it kind of encompassed that. And I worked with a very talented artist from Chile named Carla Diaz. And then the colorist for that was actually Winona Nelson, who I went on to work with on Artifice.
Now, I was actually just about to talk to that. So it's funny. You said Shot in the Dark. And at first I was like, did you adapt the Peter Sellers movie that was sort of a prequel to Pink Panther? Because that would have been amazing, too, if you had made it like with cute versions of this character. You really kind of taught yourself and built yourself out of the, because I know you're a film editor, and then this is just a whole separate thing you do. And so I'm really like, it's really encouraging as someone who fancies, occasionally to write a comic, that, you really just did it all yourself. And I mean, I know you were very self-driven and you're self-promoted. I mean, everything I've ever seen of Yowie 911 has always been you. And it's like sheer force of will to bring that to life. What were some of the early challenges that you faced getting the word out and getting your work out to the community?
Right. So in terms of early challenges, I mean, certainly learning to find artists and to work with artists, that was an early challenge. But in terms of getting the word out, basically in the beginning, my plan was to release my comics in PDF form. People would sign up for my mailing list, and then they would receive those comics. And so you can still do that. You can still sign up for a mailing list. That's how I still communicate with a lot of my readers. But, and you'll still get the original comics I sent out. And that was A Shot in the Dark. It was also a few chapters of a longer work that I was working on called Tough, which had a Filipino American hero. And my idea was that I'd do that and then build up enough of an audience doing that, that then eventually that people would pay for these PDFs. And that was my grand plan in the beginning. And so, you know, in some ways in the beginning, it felt like a really good success because offering these comics for free to for people signing up for the mailing list within about, I don't know, a year, year and a half, I'd built up about 24,000 people on my mailing list.
Wow.
So, yeah, you know, on one level, you know, that felt like, wow, that felt really, really good. On the other hand, when I went to the very first YaoiCon, so it's a comic that should, it's a convention that's right in my genre. You know, these are people who should be exactly, because not only did I do release of comics, I also did reviews of Yaoi books and other gay comics. And so when I went there, I didn't expect, you know, to be famous or anything, but I expected someone to know who I was, right?
Right.
No one knew who I was. Like, nobody. but what people did know is everybody knew these other comic creators who were creating comics called Starfighter. Hamlet Machine was creating a comic called Starfighter.
Mm-hmm.
And then CC and E were creating a comic called Tea House, both of which were web comics. And everyone knew about them. And originally, when I thought about web comics, I thought they were kind of, for me anyways, they sound like the dumbest idea ever, because I really want that satisfying chunk when I read.
Right.
And reading something that's a page a week or 2 pages a week, that felt like torture. But then I realized, of course, that actually I did read webcomics. I read Starfighter. Why did I read Starfighter? Because I had a friend of mine who tweeted about it every single week. Like every time there was an update, my
yep.
friend retweeted their update.
Yep.
And after about 15, 16, 17 times, I'm like, all right, I'll look at this comic. And then I got hooked. And it was such a low barrier to kind of keep up with it. It was, mm-hmm. it was so, you know, that I just wound up keeping up with it. And I, you know, and then I also got into Tea House and some of the other webcomics. And that's when my original plan, Artifice was sort of like the one that I was going to sell. It was the graphic novel that I felt most proud about in terms of my scripting. And I was working with Winona Nelson on it, who is very talented. And my original plan was to release that as a PDF and to sell that. But after seeing the difference in response from the kind of the method that I was using versus kind of getting your work out there as a webcomic, that's when I decided to release Artifice as a webcomic.
Now, I know, like you're saying, when I first thought about webcomics, you know, years ago, I think it was like Penny Arcade. You know, that was the one that I always thought of as, oh, that's a webcomic. And you're right. It's just a little wacky adventure in a panel, just like a traditional comic strip in like a newspaper or whatever. But, you know, your story is more serialized and ongoing. And I think when I started seeing that with Artifice specifically, I was like, oh, this is cool. I like this. And what's beautiful, it's kind of like TV, you know, you know, at least in some ways, it's out there, it's accumulating. If you don't want to sit there and wait week to week, you can just let it build up and then binge. And it works great for that. In fact, I actually think I read Young Protectors, you know, the beginning of it anyway, when it first came out, you know, after it had been going for a little while, and I just really enjoyed that page after page. And then it got to the end of it, I was like, or the end at the moment, you know, not like
right.
a logical ending. I was like, oh, come on. So
right,
I love that model, because it really is like that old serialized, you know, storytelling that we love in mainstream comics and in a lot of television now. And I think it really, like you said, it works well to get people's attention. Artifice is interesting, because I felt early on it was very different from what I had seen of yours previous. And it was very much a slow burn. It felt like to me, which was a good thing, because, you know, I think at the same time you were doing that, I was really a fan of Brian Michael Bendis comics and other what they used to, or they still probably call it, that whole decompressed style of storytelling.
Right.
Were you trying, like, with it? I mean, you know, it's also very different because it's like a sci-fi idea, not a fantasy or a superhero thing. What were you trying to do with the storytelling that was different than what came before?
In terms of Artifice, what I was trying to do that was different. I mean, one thing, of course, that I was trying to do was create a story with a hero that was what was special about the story. What was supposed to be special about the story was the heroism and the action and the adventure and the actual, you know, that it was supposed to be a really good genre story first. That way we got to experience sort of the same thing that, you know, cis straight white male kids got to experience. But this is sort of for the rest of us. So it's just with the same. So it was basically a question of wanting to have the storytelling be something where it was a story first, but that it didn't at all skimp on the gay romance. And that really my primary goal was to create it at a level of professional quality, so it felt pretty indistinguishable from what you would get from mainstream publishers. So those were three things that I was trying to do that was going to be different. And then, of course, there's the stuff that's just kind of the writer I am. I tend to be a pretty thoughtful writer in terms of I like to explore deep issues. And Artifice is primarily, you know, an entertaining android, you know, kind of sort of set in the world of aliens story overall. But it also explores deeper issues of what it means to be human. What is it? How do you know if somebody really loves you? And, you know, and kind of explores themes of power and powerlessness throughout that kind of thing.
I was going to say the themes of powerlessness in the, you know, the various, like, you know, character on character. There's definitely always one of the two characters that sort of is obviously in control and sort of, I don't want to say questioning the other, but there's that element, and it comes across in the storytelling and it comes across in the art, whether it's the, I think the scientist who's interviewing Deacon, and, right. And then, or when Deacon is interviewing Jeff or interviewing, but there's definitely, it feels like always this sort of power struggle going on the page, which, you know, is actually very dynamic. And I feel like it makes for a more interesting story when it is that sort of dynamic and not just sort of two peers sitting there talking, you know, like there's nothing wrong with that if the story is good, but like it, that extra element of that, who's going to make who do what kind of thing. I don't know. I feel like that really helped push it and propel it and really set up a good stage for it. And the art, Winona's art is killer. Like I don't know what she had done previous to this. I should probably look for other things that she's done, because I'm telling you, and I'm telling the audience more than you, because you know this. It is caliber of a mainstream publisher, no doubt. Like I'm just continually impressed with the quality that you've put out, given that it is a fairly small operation. I think it's you and the artist, and if you have a separate inker, but I mean, you know, your production is, it's your production, and it's the same, again, same quality level you'd find in any of the big publishers. So, you know, I, building that team up, like, was it kind of a constant, just, I'm on the lookout for other new artists, I'm on the lookout, you know, going to shows, talking online, like, you know, building that team, did it take a while to get that right, you know, mix with the different projects, and, you know, did you have any problems finding the right people?
So, you know, it definitely, I'll say the answer to that is definitely true. You know, let me sing a few praises of my artist. Like, first of all, Winona Nelson is a rock star. I was one of the first comics that she worked on. Wow. But she did all the art line work through Colors. Mm-hmm. What she did is she did digital pencils, printed every page out, hand inked it, scanned it back in, did digital coloring. And those are the interior pages. For the cover of the book, which I think I sent you a copy of the book. Did you get a chance to look at Artifice?
I have not seen the cover, no.
Okay, then the cover of Artifice was actually hand-painted oil on canvas.
Oh, wow.
And there's a whole description in the back of the book about that whole process. You go through a whole art process, including painting that. So, you know, right now what she's doing is she's actually working on a Magic the Gathering art, and particularly like the highest end cards that they have there, which is one of the most plum gigs you can have as a painter, as an artist. And she's doing amazing work for that. That's Winona. And she's also was a dream to work with, you know, really awesome. And then for The Young Protectors, which is a superhero story, that's the current webcomic that's updating. For that one, it's Adam DeCrocker who does the line work for that. And he has worked a lot for DC and Marvel, but he also, you know, he's worked on Teen Titans. He's, you know, a total pro, along with Veronica Gandini, who does the coloring for that. She's also a Marvel colorist. She was nominated for a Harvey Award for Mouse Guard.
Wow. Yeah, that's that I can totally see that now that you say that.
You know, they're very, very talented and wonderful to work with. I feel very lucky. And then in terms of how I was able to get them on my team, there are these various sites where you can put listings for artists. And one of the things that made my listings different, of course, was that I was offering money, which kind of made me different from about 95% of all the other listings out there. Mm-hmm. And in particular, a real page rate. And I wasn't coy about it. Like, some people tend to be coy about what they're offering and all that. No, I just put it right out front, how much I was offering per page, what my expectations were. And then when you do that, and particularly when you offer money, you get a lot of response. So I you know, for A Shot in the Dark, for example, the very first comic I did, I got about 300 responses.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, out of all those responses, when I was looking for the colorist, for example, Winona was just head and shoulders above everyone else. I mean, she was just amazing. For Adam, it was, you know, and I had sort of a similar response with Veronica Gandini, too, when I was looking for the colorist for The Young Protectors. For Adam, actually, I went, are you familiar with Prism Comics?
Yes, of course.
So Prism Comics, you know, it's a nonprofit organization that supports LGBT comic creators, and they have a section on their site where you can have kind of list your portfolio. Mm. And I went through all 200 people who had portfolios on their site. And again, I mean, I have very high standards and a particular, you know, a particular style I'm looking for. I like the art to be very naturalistic, highly rendered. And out of that, there were two artists who, I thought would fit really well with the style, and one of them was Adam DeCrocker. And because he was and is a professional artist, and you know, I certainly was not, you know, I'm not famous now. I certainly was a lot less famous back then. You know, I reached out to him and I asked if he would do a poster for me, like a pinup, just to kind of establish what it was like to work with me, with kind of a low, you know, it's sort of a lower ask in terms of it. Worked together on that, and it went really well. And then I asked if he would do a short comic with me, which actually turned into the prologue of The Young Protectors. And he said yes to that, too. And it was such a great experience. And at that point, Artifice, which was my first webcomic, was just wrapping up, and I was having much more success with webcomics than I thought I was going to have. In fact, you know, as I think I mentioned before, you know, I really very strongly believe webcomics are the best way for an independent creator to get their comics work out there right now.
Oh, absolutely.
I needed a new webcomic, and I basically said to Adam, Adam, I really have enjoyed working with you on this short comic. If I came up with a much longer work, would you be up working with me on that? And so he said he would be. He said he'd really like to do that. And so I kind of went back to my writer's cave and really thought about it. Was there a way to expand this sort of relatively high concept, but you know, what was a pretty limited idea in the beginning, into something that would be more, a much more epic, longer story that could cover the themes that really matter to me, you know, the power of friendship, the power of overcoming adversity, you know, basically that, you know, that trauma doesn't have to define you, like sort of these bigger issues that I wanted to explore within the context of a superhero story that was just kind of fun and epic and had lots of battles and humor and that sort of thing. And I was able to come up with that story, and I shared the script with him, and he really liked that, and, you know, the rest is history.
Yeah, I was actually, while you were talking, I was, like, just flipping through some of the random pages, and it's really clear that the prologue art from Adam up through, like, where the story's at right now, I mean, you can see the process and everything really tighten up, and, like, the colors particularly, I mean, they're great at the beginning. Like when you said the mouse guard thing, I was like, oh, I totally see that. I don't even know how to describe. It's very kind of a flat color, at least the early stuff, you know, had sort of not a sketchy quality, but like a lot of cross hatching, a lot of just, you know, anyway, if you see Mouse Guard and check it out, I mean, it's a gorgeous book, really great. But yeah, by the end, I don't know if, you know, the various people's process changed at all, but I mean, this last page where, you know, I don't want to spoil elements of the story, but you have certain demonic things like right. leaping out at you from things, and the colors are just—I mean, they're a little more, like you said, highly rendered and a little more right. just like what you'd find in a lot of, I think a lot of modern comics these days with the various coloring they do, and it looks great. I mean, it really, again, it's as professional as you would ever hope to see on a webcomic, and in this day and age, like. You know, the technology 10 years ago was, you know, maybe one thing, and artists were still feeling out the digital world and all this other stuff. But, you know, now, you know, so many artists working at least partially in the digital domain, you know, when they do their job, it's like you have to expect, like, you know, this kind of quality. So that's really cool. And I think it's encouraging for people who want to create LGBT comics that there are these places like Prism and, you know, Zan and, you know, Northwest and Prism, like all of that is really, you know, we love them. They do such good work for the community, getting web comic or getting comics and in all their forms out there. So I was looking through your Twitter earlier too, of course, and I was like, what's he tweeting about these days? And of course, all your pictures from the various shows that you've been at recently at the Prism or the Northwest booth. And I was thrilled. I was so thrilled to see like pictures of people coming up and cosplaying as different characters from Young Protectors, or I think even there was one from Artifice. Like, that's got to be so incredibly like gratifying to you to see your characters that used to just be in your head just like show up at your booth.
Oh, I mean, it's tremendously gratifying. I mean, one of the best experiences about putting my work out here has been the interactions with the readers. I mean, we have a really amazing fan base. I mean, one of the things, that if you talk to a lot of other webcomic creators, they'll often say, no, don't do comments under the page. It's the worst ever. You know, people, you know, there's so much negativity and whatever else. And, you know, I'm not, you know, this is the internet. I'm not going to say that we're immune to any of that. But I have to say that on whole, our community is so welcoming and so friendly. I feel real, you know, every time I interact with any one of them, I feel really lucky. I mean, there's certainly, when I think about the things that I wanted to accomplish as a creator, one of which was to do sort of what you were talking about before, which is to kind of show other creators, hey, look, we can make more of this work. Like, this is a really great time to create LGBT content, that we can make work that rivals anything that mainstream publishers put out. And I mean, and this is something that I've tried to show, is that you can actually make your living doing this. This is something that you can make your living as an LGBT comic creator. And so certainly part of my goal has been to inspire other comic creators and have obviously more LGBT genre work out there, which is the kind of work I really love, right? I really love to see. But the second half of that, of what I've wanted to do, is really connect with readers. And in particular, I really do believe that stories kind of give you an idea of what's possible in your life, like the stories you read. And, you know, back in the day when I was growing up, I mean, basically any stories that had a gay character, you kind of had four options of what could happen. I mean, you could... You know, you could commit suicide. That was an option.
Of course, right.
You know, you could kill your lover. You could be killed by your lover, or you could die of AIDS. Those were kind of or you could die in total misery. I guess there was a fifth option there. You could just be miserable and alone at the end. And, you know, obviously that didn't, you know, I was able to kind of push through that. But that gives you sort of like a headwind that you're pushing through in terms of kind of shaping your life and seeing what's possible for yourself. And what you think is possible yourself is often what you try to achieve. And so one of my goals is to really say, hey, look, we can be just as much heroes as anybody else, you know, to really have a chance to show, you know, readers who aren't part of the mainstream that that they can be heroic and they can be cool and they can and all the kind of things that you get to that sort of the cis white straight boys get from the mainstream kind of genre entertainment out there. I'm wanting to create that for readers. And one of the most gratifying things is both meeting readers at conventions and hearing how it's made a difference in their lives, but even getting like emails from a reader in Pakistan talking about how, you know, before they read my comics, they never thought that there could be anything like a gay hero. And they could never thought that they themselves could see themselves that way. And now that they've read the comic, they do. And that is huge for me.
I mean, the outreach alone, like that the comics medium is so universal that, like you said, someone in Pakistan, someone in any part of the world, so much of it's a visual storytelling. Even if you can't read the dialogue, you can see and sort of glean what's going on. And that is really cool. And it's nice that it comes from outside the mainstream. Like, I like when the big two, let's say, or all the other indie publishers, like, I like that they produce queer content sometimes, or they happen to have characters that are, you know, gay and lesbian, and it is a thing. But it is, I think, far more organic when it comes from outside. And it also is far more, far less, I should say, limiting, because a lot of times, you know, the big two really are trying to shoot for like the lowest common denominator.
Right.
And you don't have to. You can say, no, my audience, my market is people who enjoy, you know, yaoi, you know, basically in English and Japanese, but like that's my market, and anyone else who likes it, great, but you know, I'm not gonna make it really you know, not titillating. I'm not gonna really reach for those other audiences because they have their thing. Like you said, the cisgender, you know, white male is overserviced in the comic book market, right?
In particular, I would just add on to that and say, you know, it's not even so much from the outside, although it's outside the mainstream, it's coming from us. You know, that the kind of stories that we are going to tell ourselves, you know, can be broader, and also just more nuanced than something, like you said, that's for the lowest common denominator, that's really meant to be appealing to the mainstream and not threatening to the mainstream in any way.
Right.
It allows us to take more risks, but also allows us to have kind of a bigger payoff, I think, too.
I also love, because again, back, I think, before I even saw your work, I would, the only like queer content I knew, and because really Prism and Northwest was still maybe not even started or just getting up and running, was like, you know, certain comic publishers and creators who all they were making was really porn. And
yeah.
And there's nothing that is, to me, wrong about them making it.
Right.
But that's kind of what was out there, and that was it. And there was some semblance of story, of course, but you know, and I did appreciate still a lot of the story, you know, the anatomy that was depicted. But your stuff, and I know you were very early in this, demonstrated that yes, the art can be titillating, but not, you know, not porn. It's, I mean, you find a perfect balance of titillation and yet really engrossing, interesting, like stories that touch on real things in life. When you did in The Young Protectors, the I forgot what it was called now, but you had them sitting around watching the porn parodies or
the first interlude. Yep.
Oh my God. Like, it was such a genuine moment because you're sitting there and, you know, you've seen the prologue and you've kind of met Kyle and, you know, and Deacon, and you're, you know, the story is already fascinating enough, you know, which I want to come back to that whole thing too in a second, that relationship. But when they're just sitting around like, hey, check this out, people have made porn about us.
Right.
Like, you know, that has happened in real life. Not superheroes, of course, we don't have them, but just people. They're like, you know, celebrities or they're whatever, and they're like, dude, right, somebody made a porn about us.
Right.
And like their reactions to it were, it was like a great way to show who these characters are by just showing their reactions to these videos and what they were watching.
Right, exactly. I mean, I do, you know, like you, I mean, I think that porn is, you know, not only has its place, I think that, you know, it has an important place out there. But I think that when that's the only thing that's available, that sends another message too, particularly to younger people who are just kind of wanting to basically see themselves as heroes, but wanting to find, like, what can I be out there? What are the options? What, particularly for like a young geeky gay person or LGBT person, right? And so it was certainly a goal of mine to, again, not whitewash over any of the romance, not to say, okay, we're going to make this totally sanitized and, you know, maybe, you know, Wiccan and Hulkling will get a kiss at some point, you know.
Right.
And you know, I really like, you know, that's an area where the mainstream, I mean, I enjoy the Young Avengers. I enjoy that arc, but it's obviously got to be pretty sanitized for the masses. Whereas, no, this is something that can be something which can be just as spicy as what straight people get to enjoy, but that it's not porn, that it is character first, that it is story first, that we actually, that what really is interesting is exploring these characters as people as opposed to their body parts. And,
right.
And a second part for me too, like even in the sexy kind of stuff that I do, whether it's a romantic scene or whatever, I mean, something that's important for me is showing a variety of body types.
Yes.
Because oftentimes in porn, you know, you mostly get one, maybe two kinds of body types. And oftentimes everything, particularly because of, you know, sort of the history with comics and Tom of Finland and other things like that, those body types tend to be exaggerated, much larger than life.
Right.
And that's fine. Again, you know, if that's people's flavor, that's totally cool. But it's, if you're only showing one thing, it limits how people are seeing themselves and particularly what people see as attractive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like if they're looking at themselves, they're like, well, my body's nothing like that. And one of my goals was to show different body types. And so, for example, you know, my partner is not white, is not tall, you know, is not thin. He's gorgeous. But he's not those things that you see in mainstream, you know, sort of in the mainstream romance comics, right?
Mm-hmm.
And one thing he said to me is like, you know, for the first time ever, and he's talking about Spooky Jones, who is an Asian American hero in one of my comics, and he's like, for the first time ever, I can cosplay a character.
Aww. Like,
and that's huge for me. And cool. And I've heard that from other readers too, and that makes a big difference to me.
Yeah, I mean, and it's we're starting to see it finally in the mainstream, and I think it's in part because of people like you and other creators out there who they're not and the big two, and they're making great content that shows it's possible, you know? Like, even recently, and I would say Valiant's a fairly big publisher, but having a comic like Faith with a plus-size, you know, woman as a superhero in the costume and everything, like, just being herself, like, you would never have seen that 10, 15, or even more back in, like, the 90s when anatomy really wasn't entirely accurate, right. No matter where you looked.
Right.
But no, I think you guys have a huge, like, you played a huge role in bringing that to the big two. And, you know, you have, you know, Miles Morales now and his buddy, God, I forget his little sidekick's name, who's an Asian American. And you have Kamala Khan, you know, Ms. Marvel, DC's getting in on it and doing their things, which actually I should give DC credit. They actually, I think, over the years have done a lot to diversify things. I mean, Obsidian, you know, was out and, you know, kind of doing his thing, you know, years before everything else came out. But so I got to get back to your body type thing here, because I'm a fan of the Bears. I don't know if you know this about me or about our show. We're not a Bear podcast. I'm actually on a Bear podcast called Comic Book Bears, but that's a whole other thing.
Okay.
But we definitely do like the, you know, hirsute male form.
Right.
And Bara is actually something that in the last, I don't know, 5-6 years, I've become aware of and become kind of a huge fan of, because more and more is being made in Japan and translated, and also by other, you know, creators in that sort of genre. And I won't say that Deacon is a Bara character. I wouldn't really – that doesn't quite work, because it's kind of a different thing, right? But when I read those first pages and I'm sitting there watching Deacon in all his glory, silver fox daddy that he is, working Kyle and kind of teasing him in a way that – was playful and yet sort of seductive and also just sort of demonstrating that he is a bad guy. Like, that was a huge turn on. And again, it's not sexual at really. I mean, it's I think that most in that prologue, they kiss, you know, like, but that whole dance that they do outside that gay bar was incredibly like titillating just because of that dance. And I think especially in this culture where porn is, you know, click away and, We just hook up, apps are huge. Like, that romance, that process to get to that moment of, you know, of whatever, like, that's really sexy. And I really enjoyed that thing. But I wanted to ask you about Deacon specifically. What made you go with that kind of older, younger, like, dynamic there? Like, what was just, was it just Deacon was fully formed and you said, you know what, I want to do this? Or was there sort of something you were trying to work that out with? Like, what was the background on that?
Okay, so to give you the background, first of all, just a minor correction.
Oh, sorry.
Deacon is the android from Artifice.
Oh gosh, I did it. Duncan.
That's right. Duncan, also known as the Annihilator, is the supervillain in the Young Protectors. And so, yeah, a few things with that. So one, in terms of where that came from, I mean, you talked a little bit before about how I'm, you know, I was writing, you know, for a yaoi audience, and the way I kind of have put it is I'm writing for a yaoi loving audience, in the sense that I want to give the message that this isn't inside baseball. It's not just for, you know, gay men, that it's meant to be accessible for women as well. And about 60% of my readership are women.
Okay.
Or identify as women. So, and 40% identify as men. But I used that term yaoi early on, to kind of let people know, hey, this isn't meant to be inside baseball. But it's really meant to be for, and this is how I really kind of present my work, it's meant to be for people who want to see, you know, non-mainstream heroes, and particularly LGBT heroes. Mm-hmm. Those, you know, that's sort of the audience I'm reaching for. Like, if you've been wanting to see something that's a really good genre story first with an LGBT hero, that's the audience I'm reaching out to. So when you talked before about Bara, I totally agree with you about that, about the art. If I'm looking for the art that I personally find turns me on, Bara over yaoi any day of the week.
Nice.
In fact, you know, I mean, one thing I'm really happy about is Bara is finally getting published here in the United States.
Yes.
You know, Mentaiko and Tagame, you know, some of the most popular artists out there are now getting published here. In terms of the storytelling, you know, particularly for like Gengoro Tagame, whose art, whose draftsmanship is amazing. Mm-hmm. I mean, he tends to, you know, focus a lot on S&M, which is not particularly my flavor. But in terms of like the art style, I think his work is fantastic. So certainly that does inform the direction I give, you know, that I give my artists with, you know, with the idea that I am wanting to show a diversity of body types. Now, where Duncan came from in particular, remember, this originally, the prologue was meant to be just this short story, right? And that was, it was meant to be a one-off. And I then converted it, in, you know, as a launching pad into this much longer epic story. And the inspiration that I had for this is came from one of my favorite arcs that I read as a kid, which was the Judas Contract, which was a Teen Titans arc.
Yes.
And in it, you had basically the young team, which is the Teen Titans, right, facing off against an older supervillain who at that point was known as Terminator. Now he's Deathstroke the Terminator, right? Mm-hmm. Slade Wilson. And one of the dynamics I really liked about that particular story was that he takes care of like all the teens with powers really easily. But when he faces off against Nightwing, Dick Grayson actually gets away from him. He's the one character he can't defeat. And he has this moment of reflection where he thinks to himself, you know, it actually makes sense that the character without powers is the most dangerous one. Because, yes, I have some powers and abilities myself, but what really makes me dangerous is my mind, is my thinking, it's my strategy. And that kind of, from that kind of character, both, you know, in terms of personality, and then also the dynamic between old and young and experience versus, you know, exuberance, was something that I wanted to kind of capture. And so when I was talking to Adam DeCrocker about the character design for that, I said, look, this is sort of the inspiration of this short work. Let's come up with a character design that's evocative of that. So that's where Duncan's body type and, you know, why I chose to have him be an older supervillain, older, more experienced supervillain came from.
Now, and looking at it, you can totally see it. Like, you can he's not that same power set. He's not that same, right, you know, exact look. But just there's something now that you say that I see totally reminiscent of Deathstroke. And like that really – and I forgot about the Judas Contract altogether. Although, I don't know if you keep up with the DC Animated. It looks like, supposedly, with the most recent Justice League versus Teen Titans Animated –
yep –
that they might be building up to a Judas Contract animated.
I mean, some of these best arcs are, it's really interesting. Like, some of my favorite arcs as a kid, they do wind up in movies, because I think because they are so powerful. Mm-hmm. You know, like God Loves, Man Kills, which was hugely influential of me.
Yeah.
You know, both, you know, as a reader, but also as a writer, the X-Men arc, which basically kind of takes sort of the subtext of X-Men being gays and puts it really as foreground text. You know, they basically repeated much of the beats of that in, I think, X-Men 2.
Yes.
So it is kind of gratifying that some of the most satisfying arcs are now kind of getting released again. And I think that the people who were kids like us who got affected by this when we were younger are now getting the chance to kind of take the helm of these superhero movies.
Well, and even going back to comics, I see creators like Steve Orlando – mm-hmm – who is doing some, actually, in a certain way, something that's very reminiscent of Young Protectors in the Midnight character being, mm-hmm, he's not a bad guy, but he certainly is a hard-edged superhero, and he has a relationship with Nightwing that is very flirty.
Yep.
We don't, nothing is, you know, Nightwing is a heterosexual, you know, cisgender male, but, and I say but, because, like, that's the joke and all the, you know, issues about his,
right,
his, you know, posterior, but, like, you know, growing up that he was in that same kind of mode, like, you know, reading these characters, reading these situations and just sort of going, gosh, wouldn't it be hot if, you know, this character was gay and had a real, you know, realistic love life and all this stuff. And so, yeah, again, it's if our listeners are familiar with that, you know, you definitely would enjoy the relationship, I think, with the Annihilator and Kyle specifically. But, you know, the whole team to a certain extent. And I don't want to spoil too much because I know it's at a very kind of surprising and critical moment in the webcomic here in April of 2016.
Right.
I guess that's, was it chapter 4? Is that right?
Yeah, we're in chapter 4. It's been going on for 3 years. And I mean, one of the things that if I had to do it all over again, mm-hmm, I mean, I definitely set up certain expectations in the first couple chapters, which it's not too much of a spoiler to say that I subvert and explore later on. And I think some people get it to, you know, read like the first chapter and they think, oh, well, this is just going to be silly, funny, sexy, fun times and not realize that we're going to explore some deeper issues later on. And actually that my goal really isn't to have, you know, fluffy yaoi. And part of the issue is my site is still called Yaoi911. So people are like, oh, it's just supposed to be silly yaoi. And they come in with that attitude. And then, of course, the story is really actually meant to be an epic, deep superhero story along the lines of some of these, you know, God Loves, Man Kills or the Judas Contract, where it's really meant to be, yes, it's a fun, entertaining story, but it is not meant to be lightweight or frivolous or, you know, it's meant to be really high quality in terms of both art, but also the storytelling, too.
Yeah, and some of my favorite manga, and yaoi is something I'm struggling. I'm actually looking at my bookshelf now, and I definitely have stuff like Love Mode and Kazuna, and what's the other one I saw? Fake. I don't know if it's Fake or Fake, but whatever. Like, those are my yaoi experience, and every time I go to a show and there's the yaoi vendor or whatever, I'm always flipping through, and I'm like, gosh, I don't know what any of this stuff is, but it looks awesome. But yeah, I certainly in other manga, like what you're doing is what I look for. Like, I don't want that silly, fluffy, you know, kawaii kind of thing. I mean, it has its place, of course, but
right. The
best ones have these deep, dark kind of epic stories that then, you know, can become momentarily lighthearted, but, you know, still deep down is engaging and you know, it's not popcorn, it's something more like a meal, you know.
Right, exactly.
There's a place for everything, but, you know, the best ones I think really ride the balance between the two. And, you know, admittedly, the first, you know, volume, which actually you did send me the first volume of The Young Protectors, and I had actually read the whole thing, and I, you know, having it in book form, I was just flipping through it and just really sitting there enjoying the art so much more. You know, I have gone a lot digital. I mean, I like getting digital issues, but there is really still something to be said for just sitting there easily, like pouring through the art in front of you in your hands. Like, there's something really nice about that. But that first volume, like, you know, you said, it does set it up as sort of one thing. And then, you know,
right. Subsequent
ones kind of like subvert that, which is great. I mean, that's the way to do it, I think. You know, get them in the door telling a story, you know, hey, kids, I got candy. And then, oh, wait, we don't just have candy. We have Werther's Originals. I don't know.
I mean, you know, there are things that are satisfying about that as a writer and, you know, as a reader to have that expectation. Oh, this is much deeper than I thought it was.
Yes.
That said, you know, would I do that choice? Would I make that choice again? Probably not, particularly not for a webcomic, which comes out so slowly.
Okay.
You know, we have missed one update ever, and that was due to a family emergency, you know, in the 3 years. So we update on Christmas. It's been a solid 2 pages a week, you know, continuously. And my artists are saints for kind of cranking up that output with the quality that we have here. And it's still 2 pages a week. So things move at a glacial pace in terms of, if in terms of things unfolding. And so I think, you know, if I were to do it over again, one of the challenges people will get into it, you know, people will read this first thing. They might get 15 pages in and they think, oh, well, this is this one thing. It's not for me. And then won't continue. I've had that happen. And then some friend will convince them to continue. And they'll often get these things saying, oh, my God, I'm glad I stuck with it. But I think there's a reason, like from a writer point of view, whether you're doing prose or comics, they say, well, make sure in the first few pages you make it clear, you know, what the hook is, what the thing is to get in there. And
sure.
And I think there are times to subvert that and it's fun to have that surprise. But I do think that I wish, like with Artifice, you read the first 6 pages, which is Artifice is a science fiction webcomic. You get a pretty good idea what kind of ride you're in for.
Yeah.
And I think that for my next comic, I'll also probably lean a little bit more in that direction. Not to say there won't be twists and turns because it's still me, but I do think that, you know, there's lots and lots of people who I know would love reading this story, and they read the first 15 pages and they think it's something that it's not, and then they don't continue. So, you know, these are. I mean, this is one of the nice things about being an independent creator is that you know, you can take these big risks, and sometimes the risks really pay off. And, you know, as I said, I make my living doing this, so I feel very grateful for how it's all turned out. And then you also, you know, look at things like, well, maybe I would do something different next time.
Yeah, and that's the thing about creative art is, you know, you have to keep trying new things. If the moment you just keep doing what you know you do without that risk, I think it becomes stale. And I think people can see that in the product. Certainly, you know, I'm not naming names because I would never, you know, deem to tell somebody else like your work is stale. But I mean, right. I think you can see it in certain creators out there in the big comic space
right.
that just seem to have gotten really complacent. And they're just compared to what they started with and what they're at now. It's like, wow, man, you're just I'm not going to say phone it in, but you're just kind of resting. But again, this stuff is it's not that it's different. And it does challenge, honestly, some of my expectations. I mean, admittedly, after I read that first volume, I was like, OK, yeah, this is cool. And it's hot. I like it. And right. then it turns the page and you're like, oh, well, all right, this is different. But again, it's different and it's different in a good way. So I don't know. I'm hoping that our listeners, again, who have not already checked this out, and I know a lot of them have or previously, but you know, if you go out of there now and you check this out, it's all free, which is this is another thing about webcomics. Right. It's free. You can get it. You can read it, enjoy it. And then if you like it, you have done – gosh, you've done every way to monetize and get the product out. And it's impressive because everything has been really successful. You've done Kickstarters. Mm-hmm. And you're doing a Patreon the ongoing subscription thing now. I mean,
right.
which of the two have you found to be the most not profitable? I don't want to go there, but just the most successful and easy for you to kind of execute. Does that make sense?
Right. No, it does make sense. I will say one thing. None of it's easy.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you're right. You're right.
it's all pretty heavy lifting, but the opportunities that are presented through crowdfunding, both Kickstarter and Patreon are forms of crowdfunding where you get a bunch – instead of going to like a big publisher that has big pockets or to, you know, a few wealthy people who have big pockets, mm-hmm. which is how, you know, often creative projects like films or comics or whatever were funded before, or you're reaching for Visa and MasterCard, you know, instead of these kind of limited methods, what crowdfunding enables is for regular people to give small amounts of money, like for your readership, to give small amounts of money to make something happen that would otherwise never be possible. And both Kickstarter and Patreon are both very useful tools, and they serve very different purposes. And one of the really exciting things right now in terms of being an independent creator is this crowdfunding, because it does make things possible that weren't possible before. So the purpose for Kickstarter is to make a big project happen that couldn't happen, that has a finite beginning, middle, and end. And so in terms of, you know, with Artifice, once I completed the webcomic story for that, and I do believe in bringing stories to completion, you know, I wanted to have a graphic novel for that. But I couldn't afford to print that on my own. And so for that, you know, I asked for $7,000 to raise money for printing fees, mm-hmm. and I wound up getting $36,000
wow.
for that. So I could print it exactly how I wanted to, 8.5 by 11, you know, really nice glossy paper, really good printing quality. And then I want to do the same thing. I mean, Young Protectors is a much longer story. So whereas Artifice is a standalone story in that one graphic novel, The Young Protectors, this particular arc of it anyways, is going to cover 3 volumes.
Mm-hmm.
And so for the first volume of that, I asked for $14,000 for that because I wanted to print with the same quality as I did with Artifice. And I wound up getting $133,000.
Wow.
And with that, you know, because I was experimenting with things with crowdfunding, because I really believe it's a really useful tool as an independent creator. I threw in a bunch of things. For example, you can get, you know, 5 packs of trading cards now,
which are awesome, by the way. Those are really cool. And like when I saw those, I'm like, oh my god, trading cards! That's fantastic. Like if I was a little, like not little, but if I was like a kid again, and that was something that was out there, it would just blow my mind. So.
Totally. You know, you can get that. There's all this art that was created, all these prints you can get. You can get one of the characters, Spooky Jones, who I mentioned before, who's one of the heroes and you know, one of the most romantically successful characters. He has a cap that has a spooky ghost logo on it. You can get that cap. You know, all these things were made possible through the Kickstarter. People can get them now. I'm offering through a pre-order through another crowdfunding site called BackerKit. You can pre-order them and you can get them shipped out to you in May. So there's things that are available. It was was a lot of work. So yeah. Probably next time it will be just about the book. But you know, it's enabling what Kickstarter and all crowdfunding is for. But Kickstarter in particular is enabling individual short things that creating like merchandise that would not otherwise be able to be made without the help of the reader support. Right.
Right.
So that's Kickstarter. Patreon, on the other hand, is something different. That instead of you know going for you know, a particular project with a beginning, middle, and end, Patreon is meant to support a creator's ongoing work. So whereas in Kickstarter, you might pledge, you know, $25 and you pledge it once and your credit card is charged and that's the end of it. With Patreon, you pledge a much smaller amount, let's say $5, but that is then something that gets charged every month. So it's on an ongoing basis is what you're pledging to support a creator's work with that. And in exchange for that, the creator creates kind of some special things that is only available to patron, you know, for the patrons who support you. Mm-hmm. You know, in my case, I don't limit my comic book pages. I want that to be out there for everyone to read for free. But, you know, like, for example, you'll notice on my regular comic book pages, you know, you don't get full nudity. It gets pretty sexy on the comic book pages, but you don't have, like, full frontal nudity because I want as many people, and particularly as many different countries, to be able to access my work as possible. Mm-hmm. But there are readers who really wanted that, and so, like, some of the Patreon rewards are getting access to fully nude art of the characters, of the adult characters anyways. And so with Patreon, you know, that was something that I started, well, I guess a year and a half ago at this point, a year and 4 months ago. I started in January of 2015. And at this point, I'm bringing in $6,800 of income a month from
Wow, that. That's amazing.
And, you know, about $3,500 of that goes to my artists. But that, you know, that amount of money plus the amount of money I'm making with conventions and other sales means that I was able to quit my day job. This is what I do full time now.
That's remarkable. I mean, that has got to be so liberating for you that you have this base of people out there who just eat up what you're doing and will continue to support your creating more of that. Like, I feel like that's like the future. And I used to think of Patreon as like the NPR model, you know, kind of like, you know, hey, you want to support this public radio, give a monthly donation or whatever. But like it really can be such a minimal cost for, you know, your average person who enjoys the content. And yet in aggregate, you know, like you said, it enables you to quit your day job and just make this your thing, which that's congratulations. That really is awesome. And it's like that kind of success story is so important for people to know about who are even mildly interested in being creative and especially in the space that we're in. So that's really awesome.
I feel very grateful to my readers. I mean, like, I never thought this would be possible, that I could be making my living, you know, basically making gay comics is what I'm doing. And the comics that I've always wanted to make and telling the stories I want to tell. I feel very grateful.
Well, I definitely know from past interactions and from everything I've heard, you are always very easy to talk to and you're very responsive. And, you know, it is one of those things that nowadays it's sort of expected. But again, years ago when you were starting out, you know, you were very, very communicative with the community. And like you said, the comments and everything. I remember I would see you respond and like, that means a lot, I think, and I think I would say our audience probably agrees with this, like to be able to kind of treat the creator or writer, artist, whoever, as someone who you can have a dialogue with. It's not just this, you know, sage up in the clouds, you know, doing their thing. And sending art down from on high. It's like, no, this is a person. Of course they want to be able to know who their listener, their listeners, they want to know who their audience is and actually interact with them. So the conventions, let's talk about that real quick. Cause I know I saw you have a few, at least one I know coming up. You're out on the West Coast. So you're doing like WonderCon and you did like the Emerald City as well.
Yep. I did Emerald City. I did WonderCon, did Emerald City Comic Con. Emerald City Comic Con. I always have some of my favorite experiences in Emerald City Comic Con. And they're often with like parents and kids. Like the first time I went to Emerald City Comic Con, I just had Artifice. It was the very first mainstream con I'd ever done, and so I was a little nervous bringing a gay book to it, even though I was in the Prism booth, you know, but I figured, you know, that people might not know what Prism was, and just to be clear, in case, because I don't pronounce things super clearly, it's PRISM, so not prison, it's Prism as in the.
Good, that's glad you pointed that out. Yeah,
just so people, you know, when they want to look it up online. But I was there, and then this I don't want to give any stereotypes. Well, let's just say this older couple came wanting to buy a book for their kid, and they walked right up to me, you know, and I'm friendly and I'm smiley, and they said, we want to buy a book for our kid, and I didn't even know if they realized that they were at a gay booth or anything like that, and they just grab Artifice and pick it up and start flipping through it, and they're going straight for the sex scene. And in my mind, I pictured that they were going to like freak out, like if they got to that, if they were not prepared for this. and that there might be a confrontation or whatever. And so I'm just like, so as gently as I can say, I'm like, okay, well, just so you know, this book is for mature audiences. And the mother looks at me totally fiercely. She puts her finger on the table. She locks me straight in the eye, and she's like, this book is completely appropriate for our 15-year-old son. And I'm like, God bless you.
You're right.
You know, 20 years ago, would this have been the interaction that you would have had? And said, like, she will absolutely make sure that her son is able to look at this book, get this genre book that has a gay hero in it and even has a sex scene in it. And it's totally appropriate for him. And I'm like, yep, you're the mom. You get to decide that.
Exactly.
And then this year, I had a father-son pair come over and buy not only Artifice, but also the Young Protectors. And I think they got the trading cards, too. And the next day, the son came by and was like, I just want to let you know my dad and I read your books, and we really loved them. And that I just think is awesome. So yeah. Emerald City Comic Con is one of my favorite cons ever, just because it's just the people who are there are wonderful. What do I have upcoming? I'm going to be at San Diego Comic Con. Obviously that's in San Diego. I'm also going to be on the East Coast in Brooklyn for FlameCon.
I know, I saw that. Did you go last year?
I didn't. Adam was there.
Oh,
so
okay.
Adam is located on the East Coast, so he sometimes does cons for me when I can't attend. Uh-huh. And he's awesome. And so this time we're going to get to do it together.
Cause, oh, that's great.
It was a one day last year, and that would have been a tough financial thing for me to just come and make that flight for one day.
Sure.
But this year it's 2 days, and I hear it was totally awesome and fun last year. And so I'm really looking forward to doing that this year.
Yeah. Our friends up at Geeks Out in New York, they everyone, like you said, who I talked to, right after that show, I think right after last year, they had a Heroes Con down in Charlotte, and some of my gay creator friends who were at FlameCon, they just said it was a lot of fun, and for a first time they've ever done a show. I mean, Geeks Out didn't start as a show like producing entity; they were a nonprofit trying to spread geeky awesomeness in New York, and then they were able to pull off this convention. And we wanted to go. I was really kicking myself because I was like, well, we're Flame On and you're Flame Con. We should totally do stuff. But like, you know, even for us coming out of Florida, it's even getting up on the East Coast can be a challenge. So we're going to see. We might be there this year. So hopefully we can actually meet in person. It'd be awesome to come see you and support everybody. And yeah, if you haven't checked out Flame Con, you definitely should go look up Geeks Out and flamecon.org or con. I'm not sure what the actual website is, but if you Google Flame Con, you'll find it. So what else do you have coming up? Do you have any other Kickstarters kind of on the horizon, or is it kind of just sustaining and building off of what you're doing now with the Young Protectors?
So there's going to be Volume 2. I mean, basically right now, because this previous Kickstarter had so much, I mean, I only covered like half the stuff that's being sent to the Kickstarter backers. It's just, it's now finally all complete and all being sent out right now. And there's going to be still a couple more months of me sending out stuff, particularly to the high-end backers who are getting customized rewards. So I've got a few more months of that on my plate, but then there will be another Kickstarter for Volume 2. And that will hopefully, my goal is to have that in the fall. I'm actually thinking of maybe doing another Kickstarter after that for a secret book that I don't want to reveal what that is, but I have an idea for another Kickstarter after that was suggested by a reader. And then, in terms of, we're almost done in terms of, when I say almost done, we've got another couple of years of this particular arc of the Young Protectors, which is focusing on Kyle, who's the firebending superhero.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, if there's interest, then we're going to be likely to focus on another one of the Young Protectors characters. Probably either Spooky Jones or Flyboy. Those tend to be, those are very popular characters, and they have some interesting backstories. It might possibly Fluke. So those would be one of the three characters that we might focus on for the next arc.
Awesome. Well, and all of that you can find up on webcomics.yowie911.com.
That's right.
And then your Kickstarters are linked off there. Your Patreon is linked off there. So I think, is that the easiest, or what's the easiest URL for them to go to?
Probably, if I'm thinking, the easiest URL to remember would be youngprotectors.com. That'll actually just, it'll link over, it will redirect to the right site. And again, just so again, I don't pronounce things very clearly, that's young as in not old, YOUNG, and protectors. Just like protecting somebody from danger, youngprotectors.com should get them to my main site. And from there, you can find links to get to the Patreon. Check out my notes underneath each page, because then I've also, a couple times a month, I'm linking to this pre-order site where you can still get access to some of the Kickstarter goodies. that's going to go on for another couple months until I'm done shipping all the Kickstarter stuff. So if you weren't able to be part of the first Kickstarter, which many of my new readers weren't, you can now get access to those rewards and order them through this quote-unquote pre-order site, even though right now I'm currently shipping. So that's another thing that you might want to check out.
Yeah, definitely. And you can get yourself some awesome trading cards and a hat and all the other cool swag you have. And again, like that you have that product for especially young readers who just they want all the things, you know, like that's awesome.
Yep.
They I'm really happy for I'm jealous. My younger self is jealous that like, I mean, I can still enjoy it, you know, my late 30s that I'm in. But still like that having that as a young person out there. Oh, so awesome. And definitely follow you on Twitter. What's your Twitter handle? Yowie911 or.
So basically all my stuff is Alex Wolfson.
Okay.
So and it's Alex. W-O-O, so two O's after the W, L as in Larry, F as in Frank, S-O-N. So it's sort of like Son of Virginia Woolf is how
nice.
That's spelled. So Alex so it's Alex Wolfson on Twitter. It's also Alex Wolfson on Tumblr, Facebook. It's also Alex Wolfson, although there is also the Yowie 911 page, which is sort of the official page on Facebook.
Okay. So plenty of places to find out all the new exciting projects that are coming up. And if you forget about Yowie or about Young Protectors, you shouldn't, but if you do, you know, and you've liked this, then you'll get those awesome reminders, which again, that's how it, you know, you know, new content's coming up, but you forget, and then you can binge read and have such an awesome time. So, Alex, thank you so much for sitting down with us. And I'm so happy to see your success. And I'm just so, so excited to keep reading Young Protectors for more years. Like, this is awesome. It's, I don't know. I'm just really happy that you are you're doing awesome things.
Well, thank you so much, Brian. This has been a lot of fun.
Thanks for listening to Flame On, presented by Nerdy Show. If you like what you heard, please rate and review us on iTunes, like and follow us on SoundCloud, or give us your feedback at nerdyshow.com/survey. Flame On was produced by Pat O'Rourke, edited by Pat O'Rourke, and special thanks to Pat O'Rourke. Not Brian, who likes to take the credit for doing what I see as nothing. As listener-supported entertainment, we rely on you to keep this and other shows on the Nerdy Show Network alive by telling a friend or funding the network via Patreon. Any size contribution gets you exclusive outtakes, episodes, and images from across the network, and there's even more perks available. Just head to patreon.com/nerdyshow. To find out how you or your company can underwrite this or other Nerdy Show programming, visit nerdyshow.com/sponsorships. For more podcasts, articles, community forums, and other awesomeness, visit nerdyshow.com and be sure to follow Nerdy Show and Flame on all your favorite social networks like Twitter, Recon, Scruff, Grindr, Twitter. Did I say Twitter? Did I hit all the major ones? Jacked, like Hornet, if you're in like Southeast Asia. I think that's it. I think I've hit the, maybe one day they'll give me like free membership. I'm paying for premium. That's a joke. If it's geeky, we've got it covered.